it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But what did you see from Brock Purdy? Because as you might expect, some fans saw two interceptions, and, you know, they don't like that, Greg. Yeah.
There you go.
You know, so I guess Purdy looked particularly good to me because at least he knows how to play quarterback right now. It's funny you talk the interceptions. The first interception was very interesting because it was a first down play. And I think people will be able to see this because I'll explain it, I hope, very clearly. And I think it was a run blitz by the linebacker Thomas, who didn't play many snaps. It was first down. I don't believe it was a pass blitz. It was a run blitz. And McCaffrey was forced to pick him up. And so what that meant is McCaffrey could not release as a check down or as an underneath route, which would have been right in the area of Jones and the linebacker, Ernest Jones. So what happened there is Jones was able to sink and get much more depth because he didn't have McCaffrey right in front of him as a potential receiver. And there was pressure on Purdy, so he kind of fell away from the throw trying to hit Jennings on the dig route, part of the dagger concept, and therefore Jones was able to get really good depth and still had to leap up to get it. So, you know, it's the kind of throw where the fact that Purdy does not have a power arm comes into play because the pocket was squeezed and he sort of threw it falling away. But I understand why he threw it. It wasn't a bad read. It was just that the Seahawks beat the 49ers on that play because of the blitz, which, as I said, I thought was a run blitz.
Yeah, and tip of the cap to Seattle and the linebacker for dropping deep and making that throw almost impossible to complete. It's the other interception, Greg, that kind of stuck with me because, yeah, and he's got at least two or three defenders there. What did you see on the tape about that choice from Purdy to make that interception?
Yeah, that was man coverage all the way, and Josh Jobe played it really well. He undercut Pearsall because he knew he had help over the top. There was really no window for Purdy to get the ball to Pearsall. Witherspoon kind of sunk from underneath, and Woolen from over the top kind of squeezed the space as well. That was a poor decision. That ball should not have been thrown to Pearsall. So that one was just a poor decision. And an important part of the game, too, because that was in the fourth quarter. So that one, yeah, that one he should not have thrown. You know, I know why he threw it, because the play really it was a vertical element on the left side, kind of a post route, and then Pearsall was running kind of the crosser or over, and it's a very common two route concept, and he pretty much thought, hey, you know, I'm going to throw it to Pearsall because that's normally where you throw it in that concept, and he just, I don't know whether he didn't see it correctly or he truly thought he could get it in. Only Brock could tell you that. But it turned out to not be a good decision based on how the coverage played out.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us as he is every Wednesday on Willard and Dibbs. All right, Greg, take us through, and it wasn't the last play, but the touchdown pass that ended up being the game winner. Like, what went through your mind when you saw him release the ball the first time you saw it?
You're talking about I saw it live, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, when I saw him release the ball, obviously, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is probably not going to be a good thing, because the play started to have the feel of you know, a bad play. I mean, you know how that goes. It just starts to have the feel of a really bad play. And, you know, I that's what I kind of felt. And then the guy just went, yeah, look, it's a lucky play, but it worked. I mean, he looked left initially. You know, obviously he was looking left to the two receiver, to McCaffrey and Valdes-Scantling, I guess it was, on that play, 83, if I remember correctly. So he was looking to the two-man concept. Could he have thrown it to Valdes-Scantling? He may have been able to. You know, sometimes when you have a new receiver and you just don't feel like you're – like, for instance, if that was Jennings who would run that route, maybe he throws it to him because he feels good about Jennings. But he comes off of it, And then the pressure, actually, there was pressure there. Williams did get pushed back into the pocket. And then he had to leave the pocket to his right. And then it becomes a fire drill. And you're just looking, you know, you're looking for someone. And this was third down. The score was 13-10.
Right? 13-10, yep.
Yeah, I mean, could he have thrown it away and they kick a field goal and make it 13-13? I guess fans would say, well, that's not pretty much a given.
right.
Yeah, so, you know, again, you never know what goes through a quarterback's mind in that situation. Purdy's probably not thinking as he's running for his life to the right that, gee, what can Moody do right here? I'm sure that didn't really cross his mind as he's running to his right. But you know, he threw it up. And when he threw it up, you know, just watching on TV, I'm kind of thinking, I'm not really sure about that. And then it just happened to be one of those plays. Tongas went up and got it. I mean, you know, beyond that, what are you going to say? I mean, it was, you know, it's just kind of a lucky play, a fluky play to some degree.
Yeah, I didn't see the luck in it. I saw a 49er make a play, whereas a Seahawk didn't. But I don't want to quibble with your use
right,
of the
four-letter word. But fluky. Like, you wouldn't have expected that.
Right. Certainly not how they drew it up. I want to ask you about the 22 personnel that Kyle used. You lose Kittle, and in that second drive in the second half, they started using a lot of big packages, two tight ends, two running backs. What did you see from the 49er offense and the way they had to shift after Kittle got hurt?
Well, personally, I think one reason they started doing that is because it became evident pretty much from the start of the game that the Seahawks were going to play in their nickel versus big personnel. See, that's a very odd thing. The Seahawks ended up playing nickel. The Seahawks played 58 nickel snaps, okay? And they played, I believe, 32 of those 58 snaps against 12 and 21 personnel. So I think that they probably thought that they would have an advantage running the ball. Now, they didn't run really well. I didn't think that was a function of McCaffrey. I thought he looked fine. I thought the Seahawks did a really good job of controlling gaps. I thought it was much more a function of that. But I think once they saw how the Seahawks were going to play from a personnel standpoint, playing nickel to 12 and 21, they figured they'd stay with it. And by the way, we know that 21 personnel is a major foundation of Kyle's offense basically since they've had Juszczyk. So that's not something that's abnormal for the 49ers.
Greg, let's get to Mac Jones, who we are likely to see Sunday in New Orleans. And I guess start with sort of more of an umbrella question about his play over the last 4 years. What have you seen as his strengths and weaknesses?
Well, I think in many ways he's stylistically similar to Purdy, other than the fact that he's not as good an athlete as Purdy. But I think when you put him in the context of this offense, and that's all we can do because that's what he's going to be doing, is he is a timing rhythm player. He can execute the kinds of throws that are asked to be made in this offense. Now, he obviously played last year and had some ups and some downs, which was to be expected. He was in a pretty dysfunctional situation. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to come out and be unbelievable and, wow, it's special. But the way in which he plays, and I think everybody was probably well aware when he came out in the draft that it seemed that Kyle liked him because it's that style of quarterback. He's a timing rhythm player who gets the ball out, and that fits what Kyle wants. I mean, Kyle, you know, it's funny. I sit in the matchup room here. We got, you know, three or four guys that, you know, we all work on the show. And, you know, every week when I watch the 49ers, I call guys in and say, boy, that's a really cool concept. That's a really well-designed play. You know, and that's what Kyle does really well. He's really good at designing plays and creating reads for the quarterback. I mean, just think of the Juszczyk 25-yard reception, okay? I'm sure you guys remember that. That is just a beautifully schemed and designed play. That's what Kyle's good at. And ideally, your quarterback is able to get the ball to his primary read based on the design of the pass game. And if that can be the case more often than not, of course, it's never the case 100% of the time, but if that can be the case more often than not, then Mac Jones can function in that style of offense because that's who he is. He's not something else. That's who he is.
Yeah, that play was, you know, Juszczyk kind of chips and delays, and all of a sudden he had the entire half of the field. And I just highlight you pointing it out because Juszczyk may have to play more of a Kittle role. Is he suited to slide up when they do have 21 personnel, two running backs? He did a lot of it against Seattle, but he wasn't as much of a pass catcher. Can he, based on what you've seen, kind of assimilate the Kittle role a little bit?
I think he can, and he's done that in the past. There's always been plays to Juszczyk in the pass game that have been designed for him. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, boy, he's going to be a foundation in the pass game, but there's no question that you can design plays for him. He's a very good receiver. He's not just a check down guy. I mean, obviously, you're not going to line him up wide and say run by somebody, but there's no question you can create opportunities for him. I mean, I remember plays over the years where he'd be an offset back in a two-back set with the quarterback under center, and it would look like an ISO lead run, and he'd run right at the linebacker, but it wouldn't be a run, and then he would just keep releasing, and they throw the ball to him. So, I mean, there's ways to get him involved as a pass receiver more than they normally use him. No one's Kittle, obviously. Kittle's, you know, arguably the most complete tight end in the league. But you certainly can do that, and they'll figure that out. I mean, you know, even Jennings, look, Jennings, it was his first game. He hadn't practiced a lot. You know, he'll probably be more of a factor. We saw Pearsall. You know, Pearsall's a good player. So we'll see how the pass game works. You know, they'll definitely want to run the ball better than they did in terms of production.
Greg, interesting that you would say stylistically, Mac and Brock similar, but Brock obviously the better athlete. So here's what I'm curious about. Go back to last week, and you saw what you saw from the 49ers offensive line, which did... Yeah. Again, it did force Brock to use his legs a lot. Now Mac, who won't use his legs as much, is behind that offensive line. So I wonder if you see that as potentially problematic.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm always leery of making those kinds of judgments after one game, because how many snaps did they play together in the preseason? Together, five guys. Probably none.
None. So, Trent Williams didn't play. Yeah.
Right. So, again, I'm not going to sit here and say they'll be great. They could have some issues again. All I'm saying is I'm never comfortable after week one making a definitive judgment about a player, a team, a unit. You would expect them to be better. Don't forget they've got a new left guard. You would expect them to be better. You know, it's a pretty good Saints defense in terms of personnel, so that could cause them some issues. But – you know, I would definitely expect them, you know, to – I didn't think this was Trent Williams' best game either. I mean,
no,
you know,
he
didn't play all preseason. You know, no matter – look, the guys – we all know he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but you still have to shake the rust off. I mean, this is the first time he played, and then you're not asking him to play 15 snaps to just get a feel. You're asking him to play – I mean, they ran, what, 72, 73 plays. They ran a lot of plays.
They did, and Brock had a lot of dropbacks, and I guess so that's sort of the way I'm asking it, not so much to predict how the Niners' offensive line will play, but do you see it as likely that Kyle might kind of have a game plan of getting the ball out of Mac Jones' hands a little quicker, things like that?
Well, I think he normally likes to do that. I mean, will he take some shots with deeper drops? For sure, and I think down and distance impacts that clearly. And like I said, they did run with some volume in this game, but not with great production. So I think they would love for the run game to be as voluminous and even more so with much better production. Not that he's looking to hide Mac Jones. I don't believe Kyle plays offense to hide quarterbacks. I think he plays his offense and he expects it to be executed. So he's not going to try to hide Mac Jones, but I think they would love to get more production out of the run game.
And how does that match up with the Saints and what they like to do defensively? Just looking at some of their game, looked like they had a lot of plays where they had five down linemen. How does the Niners' big package of multiple tight ends and multiple backs match up with New Orleans and what they try to do defensively?
Well, their base front is really a 5-2, so you know you're probably going to see a lot of that. They've got some really good players up front. I mean, Brian Breesy is a really good player. David Godshaw is a tough guy up front. They've got some big guys up front. They can also rush the quarterback a little bit. Grandison has turned into a nice pass rusher. He got paid. Chase Young at times can be very, very good. And they've got, you know, DeMario Davis. I mean, I feel like he's 100 years old and has played for 20 years, but he is still a good football player. Pete Werner's a solid player with a lot of size. I mean, this is a good front group. you know, you could almost make the argument that you'd like to attack them on the back end, but we'll see. You know, you know, teams always, it's always a combination with offenses and coaches of what they want, their staples and what they want to establish and they know they do well. What, you know, what is their identity versus what are we playing against, and does that cause us to make some adjustments, or do we just do what we do, and if we do it well, we're going to have success? There's always that balance. You never know exactly what it is, what it's going to be based on a given opponent.
Greg, this is what I also want to ask you about Mac Jones. Like, let's go through the first 4 years of his career. We know that there were, you know, just kind of interesting situations with regard to who was the offensive coordinator with the Patriots. You know, right. you made the comment that last year in Jacksonville, things, again, that's a coaching staff that got replaced. Do you believe, has Mac Jones really had a chance yet to play in a spot where the surroundings were kind of working well and they were healthy for him?
And, you know, I've been giving this a lot of thought. I mean, this is the kind of stuff I think about, you know, because obviously everybody wants to talk quarterbacks. And so I start to think, you know, if what is the relationship between a coach and the quarterback? You know, how many quarterbacks can go out there and in a sense just play regardless of coach, regardless of scheme, and just play? There's very few of those guys, even when you look back in like the history of the game. I mean, you know, so it's always a combination of a coach, the approach that he takes with a quarterback, understanding his strengths, understanding his limitations, the people around him, the team around him, that all goes together. And Mac Jones is as much of a poster child for that as any quarterback, although most quarterbacks are. You know, look, you know, everybody talked about J.J. McCarthy on Monday night. Well, what happened was is those two touchdowns he threw in the second half were schemed plays. The primary receiver was open, and he delivered the ball to the primary receiver based on the schemed play call. So does that make J.J. McCarthy, oh, my God, he was so special, or he executed a play call where the primary receiver was open? I mean, theoretically, any quarterback can do that. So you're hoping with Mac Jones that Kyle can dial it up, have a good feel for the defense, that the Saints defense, and that he can be an efficient player. But he needs team around him.
Yeah, and J.J. McCarthy's counterpart had a couple of plays schemed open, and he didn't find his guy. And
correct.
Including, yeah, the big one.
Well, that's a long conversation about Caleb Williams and the way I look at quarterbacks. And, you know, I don't know if I've told you guys this, I probably have, but I mean, the guy who taught me the quarterback position, and I was the most grateful thing in my career, was Bill Walsh. So, you know, when I watch quarterbacks, I think about Bill Walsh.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's the way I think about quarterbacks. So I don't think in terms, oh, he's just going to go out and make plays today. You know, that's not the way, that should not be the way the quarterback position is taught, by the way.
Yeah. And good little coach, teacher, that Bill Walsh guy. What did you see on the film from Christian McCaffrey as far as, you know, hitting the hole and hitting it with force in his 31 touches?
I thought McCaffrey looked fine. I thought that the Seahawks did a really good job of controlling and filling gaps. So therefore, there was just not a lot of space. But I thought he ran hard. I mean, just look, this was a pass play, but look at that first play of the second half where he caught the little screen pad. Well, I think it was actually a check down type play. And then he ran for 25 yards. I mean, he looked perfectly fine. Wouldn't you guys agree? You look perfect.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Perfectly fine on that play. So I didn't think there was anything wrong with him. I didn't think there was a lot of space, but I thought he ran hard. You know, the only issue with McCaffrey is the nature of his injuries are such that, you know, and maybe it's just me, maybe you guys feel the same way, but every time he carries, I just like hope he doesn't get injured. You know,
right,
it's just one of those things now where I just hope that doesn't happen.
Before we leave the offensive side of the ball, Greg, Ricky Pearsall, we've talked a lot about him. We know that you like him. That got a lot of people excited. What are some of the specifics of what you saw in this effort?
Oh, well, first of all, I think, you know, the first ball he caught was just a really well-designed play that beat the defense. He ran a little bender, a little dig route, and that was classic Purdy throwing with great timing, anticipation, and precise ball location. I think the play that really probably stood out to me, if you're really talking about Pearsall, was the one that was 24 yards early in the fourth quarter, where he was he beat Woolen in press coverage and ran a great route to win on his outcut. Number one, he got off the press with no problem at all, no disruption in his route, so it didn't disrupt the timing of Purdy. And then you probably saw at the end, you know, as he got to the top of his stem, the way he bent inside and did a great job of sticking inside, and kind of Woolen got stuck, and then, you know, and then that. And that gave Purdy the indicator of when to let the ball go. And that, to me, was his best route. And then, of course, the last one, you know, that was off coverage. And it was cover three, and he just kind of ran by him, you know. And Woolen kind of misjudged the whole situation. But Pearsall's a good player. You know, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to catch 100 balls, but he's a good player.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films. All right, what's your big pick for the Niners-Saints game, Greg?
I'm kidding, Greg.
You're fine.
By the way, just on the defensive side,
yeah,
I got to tell you, and I've had it for years.
Are you going to say
but
it?
But I've got a major bromance with Fred Warner. That guy is just ridiculously good. And I thought D. Winters played really, really well. I loved what they did in their nickel front. Where they had where they moved Williams inside. They had DeGross Matos inside. And I really, you know, I love that whole approach. I think that'll only get better as the year goes on. So, you know, I think there's some good things here, you know. And I got to tell you, I didn't know this was going to happen because, you know, I'm not in their meetings, obviously. But I really like Siegel coming out of Kansas State. And when I saw that he was the starter, I was like, wow, I'm that really pleased me because I really liked his tape. And I thought he was a better player than where he got drafted. And obviously he's now a starting player, but I really like what they did up front. That's going to get better and better. You know, Huff looks solid. So it's Bosa and Huff on the edge with Gross Matos and Williams inside. But Winters, I mean, we know Warner, he's been doing it for years. He's the best linebacker in the game. And I don't think there's a close second. But I thought Winters really showed up as well. He's a solid football player.
Good start for the Niner defense and Robert Saleh with his second tenure, no doubt about it.
They were flying around, too. They were flying around. It wasn't just individual plays. They were flying around.
Greg, awesome to have you.
Yeah.
We're already looking forward to next week.
Me too, guys. I'm just glad it's the regular season, and the tape I watch, I actually feel like, you know, this really matters now.
This matters. I'm told this counts. So, Greg, thank you as always.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.